Hello, Rob here, and it's time for another episode of Press X, the Geek Show's exclusive video games podcast, in which we take two topics that may or may not be relevant to the world of games and just have a good old chinwag about them. All of these episodes originally start off live on our YouTube channel, so subscribe over there. So, this week on the show, we have two as usual. The first half starts off as a conversation about Death Stranding and the walking simulator, because that's basically what it was. It was a very highfalutin and ambitious walking simulator, but a walking simulator is a walking simulator, no matter what outfit you put on it. And in the second half, we talk about what it's a new series within a series. So we have, like, genres, titles, whatever. We've got one coming up for a very popular PlayStation franchise, but I digress. This one is about fighting games. Why do we love fighting games? And it's mostly positive. It ends with me ragging on them a bit for becoming a bit too competitive, but I only rag on them because I love them. You gotta be cruel. Well, you know what I mean. I love them, so I can criticise them. Anyhow, yes, that is me introducing the show. If you do like what we are doing here on PressX, do give us a rating and review on iTunes because it helps us stand out from the crowd of many that talk about video games. Okay, so I'll hand over to myself from the past and over Rob, and thank you for tuning in for yet another episode of Press X. Hello, I'm Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And time for an other Press X video game chat. That's what it says on the homepage for our YouTube channel. So that's what we're doing. Usual YouTube malarkey here, but please do subscribe and click that notification bell, as it is much more important for us up-and-coming channels than it is for the big daddies of YouTube. This week, I want to sort of use the newly released or upcoming, I can't recall its schedule. I think it might be out by now.
Upcoming.
Of Death Stranding to talk about the walking simulator.
Yeah, I've seen the press about Death Stranding and I'm a little confused.
It seems, I mean, one of the more respected reviews, I'm not going to bring, like, the integrity of the platform into question because I know a lot of people think, oh, it was written there. Ew, that sucks. They're being bought by the developers. They're not too honest. So to avoid that, the one reviewer read, it says, it's an incredible piece of sci-fi fiction in a game we can't support its ideas. And because what it seems to me, a lot of people are sort of on, along the same sort of lines, along the same sort of agreements. They're saying that it's basically a UPS man at the end of the world with little sliced moments of survival horror and stealth, but mostly it's Norman Reedus as UPS man.
So, hang on.
Or is it UPN? Whatever.
Hang on. Let me get this straight. Does that mean I was right?
And what did you say?
I postulated ages ago when we first started seeing the actual gameplay of Death Stranding. I said, so Hideo Kojima has basically made the video game version of Kevin Costner's The Postman.
Well, you did say that. That is
and
right.
That's basically what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's The Postman.
Yeah, but there's a different question there, isn't there, that comes out of this. Does that mean through Hideo Kojima, he's become one of these people who, I hate to say it because I don't like him as a person or as a creator, I've gone off him hard.
You're going to talk about David Cage, aren't you?
No, I'm not. But what I'm going to talk about is somebody like, with the sort of instant cachet of Hideo Kojima, where most of the things that he does now will sell like a certain amount, will this make the walking simulator mainstream?
No.
Elaborate.
I will defend. Okay, I don't think the walking simulator is going to become mainstream. I think with Death Stranding, the big problem you got here, right, is with games like Death Stranding, there are a limited amount of things that you can do in the game, and that is by design.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you start See, here's the big question. What's the difference between a walking simulator and a third-person action adventure?
The action.
And the adventure.
Well, no, there's an element of adventure to walking simulators. It's just positioned in a very, very different way. It's not like I'm going to this cave system, I'm going to jump about this cave system. Oh, there's a little bit of tuft coming out the wall. I'm going to jump across that even though my arms have no business being that strong. What is Nathan Drake's workout regime? He is insanely strong in the upper body. None of that.
Yeah.
It's just walking and going into people's houses and finding clues and seeing the stories that were left there. So it's technically adventure. But as far as it's an action adventure, they are very diametrically opposed.
Yeah, but my point is, why would you want to play a video game where you just walk around and do literally very little? Why don't you just go for a walk?
Yeah. Have you played any? Are you just being obviously dismissive?
No, I've played plenty of them, and I like some of them. I thought Dear Esther was actually a really interesting piece of art. I really enjoyed Gone Home. That Dragon Cancer was a deeply moving story. But when it comes to stuff like Death Stranding, I think it's too high concept for a lot of people. I'm a sci-fi junkie, you know this.
Well, personally, I think Death Stranding is going to be one of those games that you see dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of in every single second-hand shop that sells games up and down the country.
But that's
it will be, though, won't it?
Yeah, it will be. And one of the main reasons is it's far too high concept. As I said, I am a sci-fi junkie, you know this. Okay, I'm a cat-carrying sci-fi junkie, but
there's sci-fi where there's space adventures and lasers.
I ain't talking about that sort of sci-fi. I'm talking like proper hardcore dyed-in-the-wool, gene splicing, cybernetics, all sorts of stuff like that. Real hardcore sci-fi. I like that stuff, right? And even I find Death Stranding's whole methodology, ideology, concept, whatever, even I find it pretentious.
Wow, that word came out.
When I say it's far too high concept, I mean exactly that. There are some ideas in there that are interesting, but when you look at them, an interesting idea doesn't mean to say that it needs to be added.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's returning to the walking simulator, I think there's a place for them in games. I do think the term, just calling them walking simulator, is incredibly reductive.
Yeah, I mean...
But I think it's a different type of game. I think it's a type of game where you can tell a story in a way which games don't traditionally allow. Because it's basically, it's an iteration on the point-and-click adventure.
It is, in a sense. But,
yeah, in a sense. Oh, I'm not being very obvious with it, but in a sense.
I want to also point out that a walking simulator doesn't have to involve walking. It didn't.
No, because I don't know if you...
Abzu.
I was thinking... I don't know if you'd include that in it, but... let's just define what a walking simulator is. It's usually first person. It's usually you walk around somewhere which is empty, either after something has happened, or just... processing some sort of emotional thing which happened. In the case of Tacoma, it's after something which has happened in that space station. And it's just figuring out what's happened. Abzu is just a Zen simulator.
Yeah, but that's my point.
I like that as a genre, by the way.
Yeah,
a Zen simulator.
How's Abzu any different from something like Dear Esther?
Completely different.
Or The Unfinished Swan?
I don't know if Unfinished Swan is. It has elements of it, Unfinished Swan.
Unfinished Swan is clearly a walking simulator.
But I think walking simulators are basically... they're all about the narrative. Abzu hasn't a narrative.
But that's my point. Does a walking simulator have to have a narrative? It's a walking simulator. Sometimes,
you get very highfalutin on this.
Sometimes you just want to go for a walk.
If you just want to go for a walk, just go for a walk.
See, now you're parroting me.
But... that's not what walking simulators are about, because as I mentioned, these things are about the narrative. I mean, Dear Esther is a game about depression, and could you see Gears of War 6 being an intimate expression of what it's like for one man to be depressed? Can you, really? Because I can.
Hang on, give me a second to work this out.
It can.
No.
But on a similar note, I think there is games which could also have worked as a walking simulator. One which I was on the bus to recording this today. The one which was sort of spinning around my head and thinking, that's a great idea. But I think Bioshock could have been a great walking simulator.
Yeah. Actually, Bioshock could have.
So there's games which, it just because it's a very specific type of game that is it, doesn't mean it's limited by what it currently is. It can also be other things. See, Bioshock is, you could have sort of a horror edge to the walking simulator.
See, here's the thing, though. This is where I start being a bit skeptical.
It's a very limited genre. There's no doubt about that.
Well, it's not that. I'm a bit skeptical about it as a genre in the first place. And one of the reasons why is because there is a genre called first-person adventure.
Yeah.
That is already a thing.
But there's action in that, isn't there?
No. First-person adventure is already a genre.
What's some of the things in that?
So I'm going to be reviewing Deliverers of the Moon at some point. And yes, there is action in that, but it is very much a first-person adventure with third-person elements in there as well.
What was that one called? There was one where you were basically on the moon and you had to investigate sort of an empty space station, like across the planet or something. I can't remember what it was called. It's on PS and it's on a couple of things. I'll probably figure it out and put it in the notes below
The Stanley Parable is a first-person adventure.
What's that one called? The one which was at the PC gaming show, which you seemed to like. It's sort of like No Man's Sky, but harder sci-fi. Journey something. Journey to the Outer Galaxy or something, I don't know. Again, I'll put that one in the notes too. No Man's Sky is also one of those.
Yeah, but stuff like Firewatch in that.
Because I don't know if there's any action in No Man's Sky.
There is action in No Man's Sky.
Limited. Firewatch is a walking simulator through and through. You know.
No, Firewatch is a first-person adventure.
We're getting into sketchy territory here.
That's what I mean. Where's the line between the two? Because
I think just to move the goalpost here. There's a thing in music where a journalist will make their name by penning some ridiculous genre. So the guy who penned dubstep, he's got his name carved in stone now.
Yeah,
he's dubstep man.
Exactly.
So I think that's what happened here. Walking Simulator is some video games journalist. He thought, I know what I'm going to call this. I'm going to be carved in the stars. You can't be carved in the stars, but I'm going to be carved in the stars. I'm going to call this a Walking Simulator. Fnaf.
The thing is, a Walking Simulator, I don't think is as big a genre as everybody thinks.
I could probably name about 12 tops and that's all it.
But that's the thing. A lot of the games that are, I think, get misnomered as walking simulators are actually just dyed-in-the-wool first-person adventures.
Yeah. That's fair. That's a fair point. But I'm not saying one's bad and the other's good. I think they all have the potential to be great games.
Yeah.
It's just a different way to tell the story. It removes action from being point of the game.
I think calling a game like Firewatch is reductive because when you call it a walking simulator, you're saying, okay, it's going around. Gone Home is a walking simulator. Right.
If it was a walking simulator where you're playing at sort of micro cell level, then fair enough.
Let's look at the difference between Gone Home and Firewatch, for a second.
I've not played Firewatch, but go on, I'll try.
Okay, Firewatch is basically an adventure because there is an element of thrill about it. Okay,
it seemed minimal, but okay.
There is an element of thrill, there is an element of excitement, whereas Gone Home
is a lie. I've just got to get this on my chest. Gone Home really sets itself up like something horrific and horrible is going to happen. And it pulls it away from you.
Yeah, I know.
It's a total tease.
Yeah, I know.
It's championed as sort of one of the great LGBT games. I'm not disputing that. It does do that particularly tastefully. But it just promised horror and it didn't give it. Bad game.
You know you love Gone Home.
No, because of that reason. It promised horror and it teased me.
It did a great job of setting up the atmosphere, though, didn't it?
It teased me hard, Rob. What, there's nothing? Oh, you are going on the bad list. You are going home. But other than that, it's great, yeah.
Hang on, did you go, naughty game? You naughty game.
Yeah, and I started... Actually, that's probably why my old computer died. I started slapping my computer. Oh, well. I'm blaming you, Gone Home.
But yeah, Gone Home is it's very centralized. It's an exploration of something
It's a small house, yeah. American country.
The thing is, and I think that's one, house. I think that's one of the ways you can identify the difference between a first person adventure and a walking simulator. Walking simulators for me are a bit more introspective. They deal a bit more on they act a bit more on an emotional level. So That Dragon Cancer, Dear Esther, Gone Home, that sort of thing. They're all very much. They're all
What Remains of Edith Finch.
Yeah, everyone's got the Rapture.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Whereas stuff like Firewatch was a thriller.
It's a bit more mainstream. It's a bit more accessible. What Firewatch was doing.
But I mean, The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. Is that a walking simulator or a first-person adventure?
Never played that one. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting topic, but yeah, I mean, these are games we like. You know? It's refreshing, honestly. I think that, just make this as a closing point. It's refreshing that games have matured to the point where it can be about something which isn't violent or action-orientated. It can just be about, here is a story, here is a place, go out, explore it.
Yeah.
And that's shown games moving forward in some really compelling ways, I think.
I just want one final bit. Layers of Fear.
Yeah, you always bring this up in every bloody video recently, but go on.
No. Layers of Fear. A lot of people class it as a walking simulator. Is it?
I've not played it. Well, it is really cheap in the PS Store, I think.
Okay.
Oh, I might have missed that sale. I've missed that sale. It doesn't matter.
There you go. So there's your challenge, Rob. Right? Play Layers of Fear and decide whether it's a walking simulator or not.
All right. Well, if it's still cheap, I'll buy it and I'll let you know. If it's not, go to hell, Rob. I'm not paying a lot of money for it. When there's a sequel out, on that, I think that's all we have time for this week. Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed it, please do comment below. And we'll see you next time.
Perplexed by the pompous, ponderous piffle purveyed by normal art critics? Well, you've come to the right place, because we're not normal. We take a not-so-serious look at the serious worlds of art and literature. Join Sarah, Andrew, Rob and Graham for a piffle-free journey through the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Literary loitering. Because you can't make a cultural omelette without smashing a few eggheads.
Hi, this is Zeb Brannigan, you're listening to The Geek Show.
Unsure if your Spider-Man is amazing or spectacular? Infinitely confused by Crisis on Infinite Earths? Or does the mere thought of X-Men continuity make you tremble? Then 4Panel is the podcast for you. Join me, Andrew, and my co-host Robin Mick as we guide you through the weird and wild world of comics. We'll talk about the secret origins of your favourite characters, delve into the craziest events of comics past, and review the hottest new graphic novels that you might have missed. That's 4Panel, a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Hi everyone, I'm Rob.
As am I. I am a Rob as well.
Yes, and today we're talking about why we love fighting games. So, welcome to Press X. Before we go any further, please do hit that subscribe button and ring that notification bell. We do need all the support we can get to raise the channel to the next level.
Yes. The next level is always a better level.
Yeah, we're going to stand there and power up and while everybody clicks subscribe and rings the notification bell.
Yes. But this week, well, last week we talked about why we love point-and-click games. Bit of a loving, that.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. A little bit more complicated this week is why do we love fighting games?
Because we like violence.
Well, that's my... I mean, I'll be honest, I'm at the perfect era to be absolutely head over heels in love with fighting games. Because when I was in primary school, which would have been... What's it in America? Is it junior school, is it?
Elementary.
Yeah, elementary. In elementary school... That was when the fuss that was Mortal Kombat. All this, ban this silk filth. Oh, it's violence. Ooh, think of the children. Will somebody please think of the children?
Why?
And yeah, it created such a fuss.
Yes, it
and
did.
And when you were that age, when you're like, I don't know, under 11, and all your adults are saying, this is terrible, ban this. You're like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, for me it was, because I could play it.
I was underage. That happened, but.
Well, no, it wasn't that, because Mortal Kombat was the game that spawned the age rating system on video games.
It did, didn't it? Yeah.
But this is the thing, Mortal Kombat wasn't the first fighting game.
Oh, it knocked them up to like the next level, though. It's notoriety, Marlon. Yeah, it's game.
It drew a hell of a lot of attention to fighting games. But you had games like Street Fighter and Body Blows and various others that were already out. You didn't have a lot of fighting games. This is the thing, right? I love fighting games, but I love fighting games. One of my earliest memories of a fighting game was games like International Karate Plus, which I think is a lot of fun, especially as it was basically joystick with one button gameplay.
That's going back away. Yeah.
But another game that I and I've said this a lot, another game that was out around the era of IK Plus was a game called Budokan. And Budokan was a fighting game, but it was a traditional martial arts type fighting game where you could actually control a martial artist and learn different disciplines. So you could learn fighting with a staff or fighting with nunchucks and stuff like that.
Your entry into fighting games is so different than mine.
Yeah, I know.
Because my intro before Mortal Kombat, well, I think I got it with my Mega Drive. My Mega Drive. It was a really, really bad game called Blobs. In which you were a character made up of a variety of blobs, and you fought another character made up of a variety of different shaped blobs. It was called Blobs.
It was called Blobs.
I think it was called Blobs. It was something like that.
It sounds like Clay Fighter.
Yeah, I was thinking of that while I was saying it. Clay Fighter 63 and a quarter was it?
Yeah.
On the N64, which is amazing. That was a terrible game, but I've not forgotten about it.
But I mean, I remember back on the Commodore Amiga and game and console and computers like that. You had Rise of the Robots, it was video game robot fighting before we even had Robot Wars or anything like that.
So I wanted to ask this question now. I mean, we're getting into the more modern stuff, but would a boxing game count as a fighting game?
Yeah.
Because I remember having a great amount of fun with Knockout Kings on the Dreamcast. I couldn't tell you much about it now. I just remember it was... Because boxing games have become a bit... They're simmy, aren't they? It's like what's happened to racing games. Racing games have all become the sim. They forgot the arcade.
Yeah.
Whereas Knockout Kings was a legitimately amazing arcade boxing game.
This is where it gets interesting, because after the initial bits of fighting games like IK Plus and Budokan and that, you had Street Fighter, the arcade game,
yes,
which then got ported off to the consoles and that. But that's where and then Mortal Kombat drew a lot of attention to the fighting games.
Oh, so much,
right? And then people started discovering there was something actually fun about the fighting games.
Well, I'm not going to say that. Mortal Kombat is, I mean, last week I talked about point and click games weren't really a thing, and then Monkey Island came out, and so this is the one which really opened the door for people. I'm not going to say that Mortal Kombat is the first masterpiece of the fighting game, but it is the one which basically exploded the genre into life.
Well, it exploded the genre, but the ones to actually kick the door down. See, Mortal Kombat is a bit like, it's a bit like Akira when it comes to anime, right? It's the game that opened the door for all the other fighting games by drawing a lot of attention to itself. But it's not the game that really popularized the genre.
What would that be?
Virtua Fighter.
Go on, he said incredulously.
Virtua Fighter was a 3D fighting game, which you hadn't had until that point.
It was a 3D fighting game in which you walked by inching forward. It was so slow-paced.
Maybe not Virtua Fighter 1, but Virtua Fighter 2, definitely.
It's not aged well.
It's not aged well, but what you got to remember is when I was at uni during the mid-90s, the queues to play Virtua Fighter at the arcades were out the door. And then Tekken came along, and that developed even bigger queues.
Yeah, I mean, I was always, when I was growing up, I preferred Soul Blade, Soul Calibur, it's now become.
That came out later, but the thing is, the whole idea of competitive fighting started with Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Okay, but then it developed. Street Fighter was because Street Fighter was the one that kind of popularized the genre in certain crowds, but didn't actually make it become mainstream.
Not as mainstream as it can be now, though. But
it's as mainstream as it can be now. But Street Fighter 2 made it a lot more mainstream than people maybe thought it was going to get. But that was because of the effect of Mortal Kombat. But then you had games like Virtua Fighter and Tekken that came out in the arcades, and they were game changers because of the 3D fighting.
True.
And that was the thing. That was something we hadn't seen, and that was why we have this diversity of fighting games now. Which
I wouldn't say we have diversity now, but we'll get a lot.
Well, I mean, when I say diversity, I mean that you have different control systems.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
All these fighting games, Street Fighter has had a lot of the fighting games now, like Guilty Gear and various games like that. They have a version of the Street Fighter control system.
I have to bring up Bloody Roar because I love that thing.
Yeah.
But what I want to bring, I mean, I have a very love-hate relationship with fighting games. When I love one, I really, really fall hard, head over heels for it. But I think it's, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, what's happened is the same thing that's happened to racing games. It's found its audience, and it's absolutely unwilling to shake that. Because once upon a time, the fighting game was this... Everybody played fighting games. They were as mainstream could be. But now, they are super specific and hardcore.
Yeah,
where
exactly.
The average guy in the street can't just pick up a new Street Fighter and enjoy it.
No.
Because there's all these things like the metagame, or frames per second, these incredible cycles of buttons that you have to press to do the good moves.
Yeah.
And the stigma that the people who can't play these games, the only thing they can do is button mash. People who button mash are treat like lepers or something. And the attitude of the fighting games has changed, and I think that's why I have a love-hate relationship with them right now.
See, this is the thing. What you're saying is absolutely true. I remember the era of the Sega Saturn and the Dreamcast, right? And on the Sega Saturn and Dreamcast, you had this diversity of fighting games that we haven't seen the like.
So a Dreamcast, the original Xbox, PlayStation 1.
Even on the Xbox and PlayStation. PlayStation 1 had certain games.
That era was so rich.
That whole kind of decade, the 90s, was rich for fighting games. But in the noughties and afterwards, it kind of, like you said, they found their audience and they stuck to their audience.
There's anime fighters in there too. Yeah,
because several games that I love, Fighting Vipers, for example, you could hit someone with a scooter.
Rival Schools United by Fate. I love that thing.
Yeah.
That's actually the name of a band as well.
Yeah.
Which used that hook, line, and sinker, that name.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, the original game, was on the Dreamcast.
Power Stone?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, Power Stone is a fun game.
Also on the Dreamcast, you had...
Also, if you don't know your history, Power Stone is basically Smash Brothers before Smash Brothers.
Exactly. You had games like Plasma Sword, which was a bizarre sci-fi beat-em-up type fighting game, which a lot of people don't even know it exists. But then you had other games where... what was it? Psychic Force? I think it's called, actually had 360-degree combat in a fighting game because you were basically in this cube arena and you could fly and you were basically having to attack before Dragon Ball was the thing, before Dragon Ball games.
We can't talk about fighting games if I not bring up Dead or Alive. That's all I'm going
to
say.
We do have to bounce to Dead or Alive, don't we?
We have to bounce to it and off it. Originally, it was a really good fighting game. Like, the first two, I think it was the first two, like, really strong fighting games. But then it thought, hang on, we've got these boob physics. No. We're going to lean into these boob physics.
Dead or Alive 2, I think, was where they introduced the boob physics.
Like, Dead or Alive probably. 1, then.
The thing is, Dead or Alive is still a solid fighting game. I reviewed Dead or Alive 6. And it's still a good fighting game.
Yeah, it's just kind of overshadowed, isn't it?
It's overshadowed by the absolute nonsense story that it keeps coming up with.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking like, it literally is just the weirdest thing that could come out of a teenage Japanese mind.
The thing about fighting games, I'm going to just say this, it's fine what they are now. It's fine catering towards the hardcore. It's fine catering towards esports and all these people who take this very, very seriously. But personally, I think for a genre to be rich, it needs to cater to more than just the hardcore.
Yeah.
It needs to have counter-programming. Like, the racing game needs to have counter-programming. Sports games need to have counter-programming. See, this everything thing, needs to have counter-programming the, for it to work.
This is the thing. People might say that games like Nidhogg, indie games like Nidhogg, are the counter-programming. I disagree.
It's far too niche, isn't it? Yeah. It's like a party game more than a fighting game.
Exactly. I actually disagree with that idea. I think that what needs to happen with fighting games is that they just need to realize that they don't have to do what they've always been doing just because it works. They can, you know, somebody can look at other options. I mean, with Fighting Vipers, for example, you had rollerbladers and people on and, you know, characters on BMXs and scooters and hitting each other with their
fighting games have become counterculture in video games, I guess. I know that's a strong word, but it's kind of like how countercultures are very proud of the fact that normal people aren't with them, they're not with our group.
So hipsters then?
I wasn't going to use that word because you're using that word as a term of hate. But I'm using it
using that term as a means of clothing.
Now, counterculture is in something who's opposite from the mainstream and proud of it. That's fine. But I think for fighting games to move forward and go back to its golden era, it needs to have that broadness for anybody to be able to pick up a fighting game and love it.
I'll tell you, right, what I would love to see, right, and
I'm just going to say this, it feels like we're bashing on fighting games here, but I'm saying this because I'm disappointed that there can be more. I love them, but I feel like there could be more. But go on.
All right. I put this forward years ago, right? I said, if you want to do a fighting game competition, then do it properly. So have it tiered. Have basically different tiers, and they get trickier as you go along. And at the bottom tier, you have something like International Karate Plus, right?
Okay.
You start off simple. International Karate Plus, and you basically have, say, 10 rounds where you've basically, because somebody...
Oh, so it's like 10 rounds of each round is a different fighting game.
Yeah, each round is a different fighting game. Because if you want to be King of the Fighters, right?
Yeah.
Or King of Fighters, whatever you want to call it.
King of Fighters is another fighting game that you haven't
exactly.
mentioned.
Exactly. Samurai Showdown, King of Fighters, that sort of thing. If you want to be King of the Fighters, then you have to prove that you can basically... that you're not just good at Marvel versus Capcom or Street Fighter or Tekken or something like that. Prove that you're good at all of them, not just one of them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think I've said everything I need to about fighting games.
But so. Yeah, that's basically the idea that I had with this sort of stuff was make it round-based, make it point-based, and have different fighting games in different rounds. So they start off with something simple like IK Plus, but then you have weird games in there like Bloody Roar and Fighting Vipers and stuff like that. You have lesser-known fighting games that haven't got the attention but are still actually pretty good. You can have your Guilty Gears, you can have your Samurai Showdowns, you can have your Tekkens and stuff like that as kind of the end game bit, and end it with like a Street Fighter thing or Dead or Alive or whatever.
Okay. But yeah, I think we've got everything we can say off our chest. We do love fighting games, but with reservations.
I'll tell you something. If I have to review a fighting game, I will sit there and I'll play that game to death because I love playing them.
Well, that's fine. I'm saying I have reservations, but that's fine.
I find fighting games a great stress reliever.
Oh, they are, yeah. But that's all we have to talk about today. If you have anything to add, and don't just say, we are noobs. Get good, son, in the comments.
Now, if they say that, I'll come around and smack them.
No, you won't. I'll edit that out. But please do comment below.
I'm 44 years old. I have a right to say what I want now.
Okay. Let me finish. Okay. Are you okay, Granddad?
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Please do comment below if you've got anything to add. Until next time, thanks for watching.